Previously on Falling Low.
I thought it was a bomb. I run outside and their house is already in flame. And I was in hysterics because I thought they'd all died.
Later on, somebody else came in and said, well, that was an Air National Guard jet that went in. And my first comment was, I hope it wasn't John Rooks and his navigator, not knowing that's who it was.
They got turned upside down and they thought they were losing altitude. And they pulled back on the stick, which would be the opposite, accelerated in a dive with the afterburners on. So they were going the fastest that airplane, it's not even made to go that fast. And by the time they realized what had happened, it was way too late.
We lost things, but we didn't lose a husband, a son, a father, a brother, you know. And they lost far more than we ever did. And that's the hard part.
My mom, Sigrid, who was 15 in 1968, was in the Story City Hospital recovering from injuries from the explosion.
They kept directing me back to the room thinking I should sleep, and I just couldn't, you know. And that's when I saw the 24 yellow roses from the Air Force. They were sitting outside, and it was for the family.
The Pentagon had called the hospital within minutes of my family arriving after the National Guard jet crashed into Falling Low Farm, and a representative from the National Guard was on site soon after.
And then they finally gave me a sleeping compound, and then I did fall asleep, but it was very, very late. And then the Des Moines Tribune came at like 5:30 in the morning for this family picture, and, you know, I mean, they had to take me in a wheelchair because I was just absolutely not with it. And then after that, they put me back to bed. And then I kind of woke up and I decided, nah, I need to get out of here. So evidently, Mom had brought the two coats that she'd saved from the fire and put them in the room there because I just put on a coat then and walked to Freddy's.
I just kind of left.
Yeah.
Obviously, in 1968, in a small town hospital, patients had a bit more freedom than they do today. My Aunt Ingeborg, who was 12 at the time and who miraculously did not sustain any injuries from the crash, talks with my mom about that day.
See, I don't remember you coming back to Mary's either.
Yeah, I stole out of the hospital.
Holding the back of her hospital gown closed.
Sheesh.
Modest. Oof. And then Mom yelling at me, of course.
Of course.
When I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Happy to see me.
Yeah. Those were the days, huh?
She saw me walk in and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. I just decided to come here. And, you know, she wasn't happy. But then Mary took me to the couch and tucked me in. And I did sleep a little bit then because then the Red Cross came. They gave me an outfit.
The National Guard jet crashed into Falling Low Farm at approximately 6:15 p.m. on Monday, December 9, 1968. The very next morning, while my mom was sleeping, the Red Cross took my Uncle Mike to pick out new clothes.
The Red Cross took us to Starkey and Knutson's to get coats. And see, when you're shopping with Mom, it had to be cheap. You know what I mean? It had to be threads. It didn't have to be sewn, but just threads, you know, yes, that covered your nakedness, you know, kind of like in the Garden of Eden,
yes,
you know. But anyway, I was just amazed because there's a coat and I looked at it. It was really a nice coat, but I saw the price. It was like $35, which was an astronomical price back then. And the gal that was with me said, you like that coat? And I said, yeah, we'll take it. I'm going, it's $35. So I got that coat, you know, as cool coat. Kind of corduroy down through here with sleeves, you know, and odd gloves, a couple of pairs of pants. Anyway, you know.
You remember getting the Red Cross outfit, don't you?
Yes, I do. What day was that? Was that Tuesday?
That was Tuesday, yeah.
Did you get to go up there, though?
I did not get to go up there, uh-uh. They brought it back to me.
Okay. Because, yeah, they went to Ambrose's in Story City and bought us each. Mine was a brown sweater and skirt with suspenders and hose.
Yeah.
And brown shoes. And I'm sure they brought us underclothes, too, but I don't remember exactly. But yeah, I'll never forget that skirt and sweater. It was so cool.
Yeah, it was. They had it wrapped and they gave it to me. I was still in the hospital gown laying on the couch at Mary's and they brought it in. And I was just, wow.
Wow.
My mom's best friend, Charlene, who lived across the road from Falling Low Farm, remembers visiting my mom that Tuesday afternoon.
I don't even remember what day it was.
You came over with a mascara.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm so thoughtful. Yeah. Always was.
Well, you knew how important that was to me.
Oh, yeah. I think I had called, or mom had called and asked what you needed. And I think that must have been, see, I don't remember that we brought that, but that was the one thing evidently, because I said, I've got clothes. And everything, Mom. Well, none of them are going to fit Sigrid. But that was when the town evidently came together and were so good to you. But I brought mascara, huh? Awesome.
You did.
What a good friend.
It was important to me. You knew what I wanted.
Oh, dear.
Story City is a small town in central Iowa, just 45 minutes north of Des Moines on Interstate 35. Surrounded by picturesque cornfields and pastures, which is owned by families that go back generations, this community, which at the time had a population of about 2,000, was predominantly Scandinavian, and to this day is the quintessential small town where everyone knows everyone and news travels fast. Even in the late 60s, where there was no internet or cell phones, this community responded immediately to a family in great need.
In a small town, anytime there was a fire, people wanted to know who was involved and what happened and, you know, is everybody okay? And so this was huge, huge news.
In the summer of 2018, we recorded a conversation I had with my mom about the days following the crash.
And then people started coming. I mean, Pastor Peterson came, and then I saw Gert, which was very good for me to see Aunt Gert.
Aunt Gert, yeah. That's Grandma's sister.
Sister that married Dad's brother.
Yeah. So that was Tuesday. The crash happened on a Monday. Mm-hmm. This was Tuesday.
Right.
And so by Tuesday night, the town had already gotten a house for you.
Yes.
In 1993, for the 25th anniversary of the crash, my Grandma Marie wrote her memories of that day and everything that followed. My double cousin Rebecca reads from her account.
The community was wonderful. They found a vacant home in Story City for 7 people, furnished it, and had supper ready for us by Tuesday evening. And since it was so close to Christmas, they even had a Christmas tree and many decorations for us. They were so thoughtful and let my 2 daughters decorate the tree. My husband and I were humbled and gratefully appreciative of every courtesy.
I believe it was Dick and Kay Munson, a rental they had. It was a big house, enough for 7 people. And when we walked in, there was a couch, an orange couch, 2 green chairs, end tables, lamps, everything we needed, and a tree, a Christmas tree with decorations in boxes on the floor because they thought Ingeborg and I would like to decorate it.
The Christmas tree was there and the Christmas decorations were there, but they didn't decorate the tree so that Sigrid and I could do that and feel like it was ours. And I thought that was extremely, extremely thoughtful. I wouldn't have thought of that. But bedspreads, sheets, towels, beds for all of us, blankets, furniture. You know, it was just amazing.
I think Ingeborg has talked forever about the most beautiful bedspread in the whole wide world that was on one of the beds. And there were clocks on the end tables. I mean, it was unbelievable. The bathrooms were furnished.
There was soap. There was lotion. Washcloths.
We rented the house from Dick Munson. I think the rent was $125 a month, something like that, which, you know, turned out Mom couldn't afford it. But still, it was nice for, what were we there, 8 or 9 months?
Eight or nine months, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of the furniture was supplied from Weirson's furniture store. Mom had to pay for it eventually. But for the most part, you know, things were donated.
They had to have worked around the clock to get all that stuff pulled together. And again, it wasn't a mass email that went out. It was calling people. And, you know, Bill Larson spearheaded it, I'm pretty sure. And it was just this outpouring. It was wonderful.
So have you gone over 1,000 times the first meal we had at Hillcrest Drive?
No. Well, I think you and Mom have different memories of the meal.
For me, it was soup. I thought it was chicken noodle soup. And Margaret Larson made it. She was on the corner about a block away at the most from the house where we were moved into. We didn't really move. We just landed there. And that was funny because one of Bill and Margaret Larson's favorite stories was to tell how Mom said, "Oh, the only way to get a Chernobyl off the farm is to blast them off." You know? And they just laughed and laughed and laughed. They loved telling that. Anyway, so dinner time came and Margaret very graciously offered to bring dinner over that night. I'm pretty sure it was Tuesday.
I remember the first meal we had being roast beef, and it looked like the Norman Rockwell platter with the meat in the middle and the potatoes and carrots on the outside, and it was just this beautiful. And it was also the first time Dad was still in the hospital, but the first time all of us were together since the fire, because the boys had stayed out at Henrietta and Alfred's. Bill and Margaret Larson brought it over. And we had set the table, and she brings us over.
She carried the pot of soup down to the house. We realized, oh, gosh, we don't have enough bowls for everybody.
We're going to dish up, and there's no knife to cut the meat. So Margaret pops up from the table. Oh, I'll be right back.
We were in the kitchen, all of us were there, and there was a nook. So getting in and out of the nook, anytime anybody had to get up from the inside, you know, everybody on the other side had to get up. It was funny. And so she went back to the house. Oh, you know, my goodness, I'll go get some more bowls.
And she lived just kittywampus from us, across the street and down one house. So she came back and we're cutting the meat, and then one of the boys said, "Please pass the salt and pepper." Oh, the salt and pepper. And she ran across.
And of course, we didn't have a telephone, so we couldn't call her and tell her what else we needed. But she got there and, "Oh, you need some crackers with soup. Of course, of course." And so she went back to the house and she brought crackers. Then it was butter. Then it was salt and pepper. And every trip, it just got to be more and more comical. We just laughed. And it certainly helped, you know, to cut the tension. And it was delicious and delightful.
The whole meal was, "Oh, I'll go get it." Then Bill started going. I mean, you just don't realize what you've lost until, you know, you
lose everything.
You lose everything, yeah. And but it just got comical, you know. And then Bill started teasing Margaret because then he said, "Oh, you forgot the Jell-O." "Oh," and she'd jump up. "I didn't make Jell-O, Bill." Oh, yeah. It ended up being very comical.
Not to make light of the situation by any means, but the family has always seemed to be able to still laugh and still find joy, not only in each other, because like you said, you know, you lost everything, but there was still laughter and there was still joy and there was hope.
Oh,
and I never saw a woe is me mentality, even when grandma would talk about the situation, or whenever you talk about, or any of the kids really talk about the situation.
It could have been worse.
Absolutely.
You know, we survived. Again, you know, you make those choices.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to live?
As they spent the first night and into the second day in this house that had been fully furnished by the people of Story City so quickly after the crash, they began to notice the everyday necessities that we take for granted were gone. And once again, this generous community was more than willing to give whatever they had as their needs arose.
I remember boxes of things being piled up on that front porch. And we would go out there and get things, you know, box by box to go through stuff. And I remember at one point, a woman, I don't know who it was, brought like a third mixer or something like that, a handheld mixer. And she said, asked mom, you know, could you use this? And mom said, well, as a matter of fact, we have two. And mom saw the look on her face and said, but this one looks so much better than the other two. Of course we need this, you know. And mom very graciously took it in.
The clothes started coming in right away. And I was not to go to school that week. Ingeborg wanted to get back to school. So mom and Gert decided that they were going to start hemming.
Mom's goal was to get Sigrid and me back to school as soon as possible, get us back to normal. And so she and Gertrude decided that they were going to go through these clothes, hem and mend and stitch and do whatever they had to get things ready for us so that we could go to school. So we sat down, we're going to have a style show, you know, and we come down those grand stairs in a new outfit and, oh, you know, we just need to take it in here and hem it up there.
And then they realized, well, there's no thread, there's no needle, there's no common pin. How are we going to do this? Yeah. And again, you know, it's devastating, but you can choose to be devastated or you can choose to say, okay. And it ended up, you know, the neighbor had come over, Mrs. Johnson, and she played Margaret going back and forth for two or three things. And then finally, she and Mrs. Larson just picked up the whole sewing machine and brought it over and plunked it down. And it was pretty comical to see those two women hauling the sink across the street, you know. And it had this huge drawer of everything you would want.
I bet that thing was 4 feet long, her sewing notions drawer. And in it were every color of thread, you know, pinking shears, scissors, needles, through everything that you could think of to get going and get started on, you know, what we needed to do to get back to school. It was just incredible. And away they went. And she stayed to help.
And she said, keep it as long as you want, you know.
The local bank wanted to take donations for the family. So what do you do in a small town in 1968? You stick a box outside the bank's front door for people to leave their donations.
There was this box, it was like on a TV tray or a small table, and it had a sign on it for the Chernogle family. And you could donate cash or checks, and it just sat there. It was there a long time, but nobody guarded it. There was just a lot of trust, and it was for a family that was in need. No one would ever think of taking it. It was just a very generous, very wonderful thing to do.
One of my favorite things was when I did go back to school. Let's see. I think it was just before Christmas. And I don't remember receiving it. It was in my desk. I was in seventh grade in Mrs. Osi's class. And I opened up my desk and there was an envelope folded that had money in it. And all of my classmates, or as many who could, donated a dollar and gave it to me I think I had $52 or $54. I can't remember which, but I had never, ever had so much money in my life. It was just the coolest thing. And that meant that, you know, here I was a country kid for the first 12 years of my life. And now I'm a town kid, which I thought was fabulous. I mean, that was just the best thing ever because I could, you know, do stuff now with my friends instead of having to go home on the bus and stuff. So I had, you know, when we went to movies or if we wanted to go bowling or something, I had money so that I could join them. It was great. It was so thoughtful and so nice. And again, I don't remember a big presentation or anything like that. It just appeared in my desk and was amazing.
Transitioning from being a farm kid to one that lives in town was a big adjustment and had different effects on my mom and on my aunt. As a 12-year-old, my Aunt Ingeborg thrived in this new environment, whereas my mom, who was 15, had to replace her extracurricular activities with a job to help support the family.
There weren't other high school kids working back then. They were in sports and they worked on the farm.
Oh, the days of walking beans.
Yes. And mowing and mowing and mowing. But yeah, it was just a totally different lifestyle. Gone were the carefree days.
Yeah,
our lives changed completely right after that because all of a sudden you were in town and everything is different. Your priorities had to have changed completely. I was still playing basketball or, you know, whatever.
And I went
your
to
Your life
work.
Is different. Yeah, your life changed. I was still just probably 15. Crazy.
And just learning town life. When Margaret Larson pulled me aside, I think we were in the house 2 or 3 days, and she just leaned over and she said, "You live in town now, Sigrid. Pull the curtains." Because we had never drawn a drape or pulled a shade or anything.
Ever locked a door?
No. And so, yeah, I had to learn to pull the shades. It was hard for me. It was hard. It was very hard.
Your life changed completely after that.
Yeah.
It was just different.
Mm-hmm.
School was different.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you weren't there the first day after. And I remember
there the week.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. We had Mr. Yoakum sophomore year, and he talked about it just a little bit. It was just silent. Everybody just like, just this amazing, crazy miracle, you know, everything, disaster, but also a miracle. I think he spent the whole hour on it.
Really?
Words cannot express the gratitude that my family has for the people of Story City, for their generosity and compassion in their incredible time of need. While this new way of life was a huge adjustment for everyone in the family, it could have been so much worse. And their warmth, provision, and kindness made their transition bearable. On behalf of our entire family, thank you. As the family begins to pick up the pieces, they come to terms with all that they have lost. But little do they know, more loss was yet to come. Next time on Falling Low.